I'm John from Unqualified Gamers. Hello, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah.
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Gallifrey Public Radio, now we have maths.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 111 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we celebrate a very special birthday by giving our guest of honor planetary omnipotence, as well as a surprise visit from a childhood friend who offers the gift of an undead self-replicating cybernetic army, and a front row seat to one of the most heartbreaking romantic tragedies you could ever hope to not get to see. So you see, it's really not that hard to find something for those hard-to-shop-for people in your life. Here in the GPR studios, it's a pleasure to be joining you here at the finish line. My name is Keir, and joining me as always is Mr. Jay Witten. Jay, how are you this evening, sir?
I'm doing outstanding. How about yourself?
Equally outstanding. Extremely jazzed right now. Kind of walking on sunshine, and it feels good. And over here to my vaporous ether right is Haley Malley. Haley, how are you?
I'm doing okay. A little sore in the feels, but other than that, good.
Took a couple punches.
Yeah.
I think you can walk it off. So what's going on this week, Haley?
Well, this week we're going to be talking about the culminating finale for what has been a focused, dramatic, and stellar Series 8, A Death in Heaven. From the incredible new portrayal of the Master, to a chilling new variation of the Cyberman threat, to a heartbreaking conclusion to Clara and Danny's storyline. We've said this so many times this season, but once again, we're looking at an episode that is so dense, it's difficult to choose a jumping off point. But since one of the major themes of the finale and the season has been learning, that's a solid start. So what have we learned?
Moffat does know how to write.
This Moffat guy, I think he might have a career here.
We learn what happens when he actually, you know, pays attention to what's going on in the show.
He's not completely evil. Learned quite a bit. Learned that there is a way to be able to hold an episode and a two-parter and a series together that can be both entertaining and still push the envelope a little bit as far as our expectations. And we've been saying how pleased we are with how so many things have been firing throughout this series, this episode. And I don't really want to, it's hard to keep it separated from Dark Water last week, but I'm going to try to see them as two separate little pieces. Just this final component right here was just a killer, just phenomenal stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I sat here watching it last night, just completely unsure what to think. I'm like, I'm enjoying the heck out of this, but I want to cry, and it feels so incredibly awesome.
Well, and Haley, then, you posed the question, so come on, chime in.
It's like I was reeling from all the emotional blows, and then the credits start, and I'm like, well, whew, it's finally over. And then Santa Claus. Muppet.
They seem to be having quite a bit of fun with this as well. As weighty as the material was, it seemed like they were having a lot of fun with it too. From the opening credits to the closing credits, literally. So let's kind of use some of that for a little bit. As far as the things that really gave you, you know, Haley was talking about taking a lot of punches in the feels. That has to include the good feels as well. So what were some of these moments that left you smiling?
Cyberbrig taking out the Mistress was pretty awesome.
All right, so there seemed to be some confusion. I've had discussions with people, and they seem to be confused as to, like, what the Doctor did to get rid of Missy. And I'm like, no, it was Cyberbrig. That's why the Doctor spun around, like, what the heck was that kind of thing. And,
right.
And then there was the discussion of, like, well, you know, red light means vaporized, and blue light means this. And I'm like, no, blue light means Cyberbrig. Was it that hard to gather what was going on, or was it just me?
No. I think if anything, from the people that I was getting immediate reaction from, the only confusion was actually from people who don't know enough of the backstory to kind of connect that that was who was in the suit or who the brig really was. They're still coming around to some of the really, really newest viewers who weren't quite getting the connection with the Brigadier. But everybody agreed that it was a really good thing that those questions are coming up, because that's gonna make them want to roll back and research.
Yeah.
I can see why it would be confusing, since they'd used the blue effect for teleportation earlier in the episode, mm-hmm. but it was not the same effect. You could tell that it was different if you were paying attention.
Well, okay, so let me ask you this. Obviously, we know it's Doctor Who, and, you know, it's until the plot says so, yes, she can be dead. But do you guys think that Missy is gone?
No.
Okay. Not at all.
I mean, my immediate reaction as soon as it happened was, well, she built all the Cybermen. She probably put a safe, failsafe in there to where if one of them tried to shoot her, then it would just teleport her back to her TARDIS or something.
Mm.
So
yeah, I'd buy that.
I don't think, like, obviously we can't kill off the Master. You've done it how many times and it still hasn't taken? You know, it's, right. You're not going to. I don't think that we've seen the last of Missy. I don't think that this regeneration of the Master is done either.
You couldn't possibly. She put in such a powerhouse performance, building throughout from the little snippets we were getting along, but and we started seeing some great stuff emerging last week, but this week was phenomenal. She was mm-hmm. devouring scenery.
Oh, yeah.
And if she's got that kind of presence that can go toe-to-toe with Capaldi like that, and actually dominate the scene in certain moments, you can't let that talent go to waste.
All right, so what was your guys' reaction to the scary Poppins entrance?
I lulled.
I mean, full on umbrella open, gliding down.
mm-hmm. Well, but even made mention of that, you know, saying that, you know, she found television so charming, you know, or you know, the stories. So I think it was a matter of she was actually trying to actively emulate it or consciously. The character was trying to consciously do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've been picking up on so much of so many, character types, and archetypes, from what we've been getting, from Missy, Mistress Master, just as she's been getting more and more screen time. I have to say, and this happened on many, many levels throughout this episode, this was a Sherlock Moriarty kind of encounter. And she was our most recent sort of Andrew Scott Mad Moriarty to the T. To the point of, you know, dancing on the ashes of Oscar. Oh.
See, I put that it was like Batman and the Joker. But that was more from Clara's moment at the end where she said, you know, anytime you've let her live, this is on you. And everyone thinks that every time Batman doesn't deal with the Joker more permanently, like, you know he's coming back. You know what he's going to do when he does.
Everyone he kills at this point on is on you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was one of those things. All right, so let me ask. Do you guys think that had it come down to it, had Cyber Brig not done what he did, do you think the Doctor could have pulled the trigger?
No.
Yes. I think he would have to prevent Clara from doing it.
Okay. No, I don't. I don't. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have this kind of new permutation of the Doctor-Master conflict that we do. I shouldn't say new. It's something that really started getting more deeply explored with Sims Master. And now the lid is completely off the jar, because we're not dealing so much with the decades of intellectual warfare between the two and trying to one-up one another through their plans and their understandings of each other's inner workings. Now they're trying to get into each other's minds and hearts, and it's becoming more of an emotional battle as well. And that the Doctor can't just let that go by a trigger pull, or in this case, you know, a button push or something right. of that sort. He has to know that he has won this out for the right reasons. There's emotional investment in this that that has to be resolved carefully for his own satisfaction, I think.
Yeah, I can see that. Honestly, I didn't know. Like, I sat there and I argued with myself for a good 45 minutes. Like, well, I mean, he had to because there was this, but he can't because of this. And I finally got to the point where I realized that this was another one of those questions that we've been getting all series, you know, from, you know, did the Doctor push the dude out the thing or did he jump kind of question. You know, it's one of those that I'm like, I don't want to know the answer. The fact is that it didn't get to that point and I don't want to know. It's it's supposed to be ambiguous.
Right. So. That ambiguity is actually what gives it that compelling nature, because then you want to watch and see whether or not there are going to be more layers added to it, or as we've been getting, you know, as many questions as answers, so that it continually keeps you in that state of unrest. Mm. That's some of the compelling nature of what has made this, well, what made this episode and has made this series so tight.
Okay. So, all right, while I'm tossing out all my questions and stuff, let me go ahead and ask you, do you think that Osgood is actually dead?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's unfortunate.
So we all agree on this one, yes.
Yeah, as much as I like her, I don't think she's a big enough character to play the not really dead card on.
Yeah. Well, and Moffat actually, in the Doctor Who extra, talked about it, and he said that they needed somebody to die to really show that that Missy was a scary character, that she was dangerous, and Osgood was the one that they decided to throw on the fire so that the mistress could burn brighter. Yeah. So, and I really do think that this is one of those times where Moffat actually did kill someone, and man, I'm sorry for asking for it.
He's like, you want me to be cold? Ice cold.
That hurt. That really hurt, because they dragged it out just long enough that you think, okay, the doctor's going to come down.
And then she stepped on her glasses after doing it. Like, come on. Can't let her have that one thing.
And then when the doctor finds it and she's just sitting over there like, do you have any more friends I can play with?
Yeah. Really just taking it to that absolute psychopathic level.
Yeah.
So, you know, and brilliantly done. She was just a snake through the entire thing.
Oh, yeah.
So manipulative and just reveling in the chaos around her. Just so much fun to watch on screen. As much as you loathe what she was doing, you loved watching her do it.
Oh yeah.
But that you were mentioning about the fact that they let that scene run painfully long, you know, we've been talking a lot this series about how that's been a conscious effort between Moffat and Brian Minchin as his co-producer and things, and they're making that effort to let dramatic scenes hold their drama, let action scenes have their moment of action, let their romantic scenes, you know, or whatever it is, whatever it needs to have, give it the room to breathe.
Yeah.
And that was one instance where I think it was necessary. The other that I felt really needed that little bit of extra time that it was given were Danny and Clara's moments in the graveyard. Some of their conversations there that hung painfully long.
You mean that the moment when Clara pulled out her list of things I need to make sure I never say to Danny and said each and every single one of them?
Mm. Oh, that leads me to want to ask you, because I'm continuing to, even just 10 minutes before we started our cast tonight, I had this conversation in my kitchen. When did it click for you that it was Danny in the suit?
When he hung it, like when he killed those other Cybermen. I knew as soon as I saw him.
No. Okay, so it was when he fired the shots.
Right. She said something to him. Ask anyone who knows me. I'm an incredible liar. And he hung his head, and I was like, oh, that one's Danny.
Okay.
I noticed it as soon as he came up behind her and said, you are Clara Oswald. I was like, oh, hey, that's the Danny one.
Really? Okay. Some folks had been picking it up at the point where he crumpled the paper to bring it along that had his name across the top of the file. Some people were saying about the head droop about, you know, search your databanks, you know, you'll find out that I'm a wonderful liar. And some people said, oh, I didn't get it then because I thought it was a humor line. Because if you take it that way and you just see it like as if he's scanning the memory banks and then he looks up and says, you know, correct, or, you know, that response. But again, that just the writing for that. One of the many, many examples of the writing through this episode that was just amazingly clever.
Oh, yeah.
See, every time he hung his head, I started playing the sad Hulk music in my head.
You know, the funny thing is, I did the same thing. I've got a nephew who does that. When anytime you tell him something he doesn't want to hear, the head drops, he turns around slowly and walks away. And it's become a family habit where anytime that happens, every last one of us is like, da na na. And so that's my instant response to that now.
So we've got these graveyard moments, you know, and they have these conversations that are necessary to have. It's bringing up something that was a big topic of conversation for a lot of the folks that I've just been hearing a lot from it at Long Island WhoCon, and even in discussions since. The the relationship between Danny and Clara that sort of got put on the speed track this season. You know, meet him, date him a few times, love him, go to the end of the earth for him, go beyond the end of the earth for him. You know, all happened in rather rapid succession. You know, not a lot of screen time for them to be able to flesh out their relationship. Mm. Take that as you will. Some people are saying that didn't allow them to get emotionally invested in Danny. They care about the relationship because they care so much more about Clara this season, and yeah, they don't want to see her hurt. And I totally get that. But I wanted to check with you two to see whether or not you felt that it was a bit of a rush to get to the some of these kinds of emotional breakdowns that they were having in the graveyard. You know, about the whole idea of I can't see you in pain, but I can't let you out of this pain because then you're not going to be you anymore, and that struggle.
It would have been nice to have more time, like maybe if they'd brought him in when they brought her in last season, or a little later, but in last season, that would have been nice just to give it a little more room to breathe. But I always got the sense that more time was passing for them than we were seeing, that there was a lot of stuff we weren't seeing in that relationship.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those things of truncated time that they've spent enough time together that, you know, she was willing to say that she loved him. And then it became like they were together long enough that it was a habitual thing, and became such a habitual thing that it was an issue that it was a habitual thing. So there was a lot more time than we actually got to see. But that still doesn't make it easier for viewers who have no reason to get invested. For me, I got invested because I believed what they were saying. I believed that they were in love. And so it wasn't so much that I didn't want to see Danny go. It was I felt for the characters because I understood the way that this was impacting them. Mm-hmm.
They were putting 100% into the scene as well.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very well carried on both of their parts, which is kind of difficult for Sam Anderson sitting there in the suit and the prosthetics on his face and such to be able to really kind of convey that. But he's got very... very expressive eyes and things, and kind of, you know, he gets that kind of puppy dog look, mm-hmm, a little bit, not in a Rory way. But, you know, I think with moments like that, and this is absolutely no slam against Mr. Clark, but this is far more than a Mickey kind of relationship, which, yeah, some people were kind of were buttonholing him as just another Mickey. No, I'm sorry. It's just not the same dynamic.
And I feel like it was almost reversed, because Mickey was the one that she was with because she couldn't be with the doctor. Whereas, you know, the doctor was the one that she was with because she couldn't be with Danny. Like, it was almost the reverse of, like, you know, I'm with this person because it's familiar, but I really want to be with this person over here. And the roles were definitely reversed between Rose and Clara. Mm.
All right. Well, now you've got the doctor into that mix. This is going to be potentially... I don't know if we're all going to see the same way on this, but how did things wrap up between the doctor and Danny, and us finally getting to really air out all the dirty laundry on the doctor's disdain for soldiers?
God, when Danny starts tearing into him and ripping him apart for his reasonings and things like that, you know, when he says the line like, "Yo, don't all your beautiful speeches just fall apart at this point?"
I was called, like, him a blood-soaked old general.
Yeah.
Ugh. Go ahead. No,
That was one of those moments where I was like, you know, that's a cheap shot, but he is 100% accurate at that point. And the doctor knows it. And he's like, you know, he wants to argue with him, but he realizes I can't give this advantage up. Like, this could be what it is to save the planet. How can I really, you know, weigh that against the lives of everyone left?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, we had signs of this when they had the blow up over the TARDIS console and the sir, yes, sir argument that they had in, that was Caretaker, right?
Where
they,
yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Yes.
And it was harsh then, but it was an argument that you wanted to hear, but because you absolutely knew that he had basis for his argument, or I'm mm-hmm. speaking for Danny here, but the doctor at that point thought he was, you know, listening to some sort of a brash upstart or something of that sort, and just tore right back into him. And as you said, he couldn't this time around. And I don't think it's necessarily entirely just because of the fact that he knew Danny was right and he had this advantage that he had to leverage and that sort of thing, you know, the tactical advantage, yeah, as Danny referred to it. But also just the fact that he had been proven absolutely right. It was something the doctor didn't even want to admit in himself, was that there have been more moments than he wants to admit have occurred where he has had to make the hard call and put on the, you know, the general's hat for a moment to do something that is very much out of his nature because of the fact that that's who he is. He is in a position of power whether he wants it or not.
Yeah. When we had the Dr. Clara episode with the Boneless in it, he said, you know, he thinks this way so other people don't have to. Like, he doesn't like that he has to do it, but he does make these calls all the time.
Yeah. Just more testament to the fact that as far as some of the thematic elements or sort of the mission statement, if you will, of this series, they've been handing us steady strings throughout. And one of the things I really loved about this episode was that all those strings got grabbed in one fist and drawn tight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all those little moments, you know, back from the, you know, back to Into the Dalek, where we've got the, you know, the seeing, you know, looking into your soul and seeing evil, or you make a good Dalek, or any, and just pulling all of those moments that we had that left us, as we saw them in each episode, saying, ooh, that was kind of, oh, okay, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And now they were boiled down and thrown at you headlong.
Okay, what did you think about the resolution that the doctor came to, the realization that, you know, when he says, I'm not a good man, but I'm not a bad man? I felt like that was a great way of saying, you know, he's been searching this whole time. You know, he's been asking the wrong question. He wanted to know if he had attained this, you know, this high standard, when in reality, he was trying to avoid the low end of the scale. And as long as he fell somewhere between there, he was content. As long as he wasn't bad, he didn't care if he was able to be good.
Haley, I'm gonna lob this at you for a second while I gather my thoughts on this.
Okay, I was waiting for you to do the same thing.
So I'll take one word, and then you say a word, and I'll say a word.
You know, they flashed through all the moments this season where he was wrestling with that moment. Am I a good man? And it brought back to mind the good men don't need rules line from Matt Smith's era, the you're a good Dalek bit. And it was nice to see him just kind of comes to terms with who he is and what that means in the larger scheme of things. And he's probably never going to be able to be a good man because of the calls he has to make. But, you know, as long as he can avoid becoming the master, he's probably going to be doing okay.
All right. I think I'm picking up what you're throwing down, and I think I'm on the same wavelength here. It's because I'm thinking specifically of the, and I'm begging, it was flatline here, where she was talking about, you know, I made a pretty good doctor, didn't I? And when he gave that response line back when I first watched it that weekend about, you know, you made an excellent doctor, goodness has nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. I was taking that as I was looking at that sort of more kind of towards her. And I wasn't really taking it as a statement about himself as what the doctor, not he the doctor, but the doctor, the role, the promise, the representation of what that entails and what you have to do and decisions you have to make to be the doctor have nothing to do with goodness. And I think that's where he really started to lock in his head. And this moment on the, in the, you know, among the gravestones with the mistress, you know, beating him down with his own morality. I think that's kind of where he was headed, was that he realized that exactly as you were saying, the not a good man, not a bad man. I'm the doctor. Yeah. I have my path, and it does not make me a bad person. But because of some of the things that I do walking this path, I'm not a good person. I'm not, you know, finger quotes here. I'm not a good person either.
Yeah. Although I will say that I was taken, I don't want to say taken out of it, but I was caught off guard in that scene when, you know, he gives that line and he starts with the, you know, I am, and you're expecting the doctor declaration, and he says, an idiot. I was like, wait a minute. It took everything that was building up and just brought it to a screeching halt. And I was like, okay, wait a minute. Let me reassess here. Because that completely threw me.
Mm. Yeah, that's...
I think it was intended to as well. I don't think that it was like a bad call. I think that, you know, it was reaching that point of, like, you know, almost harkening back to the Matt Smith Sermon on the Mount type, you know, grand speech.
Right, you were waiting for the music to swell.
Exactly. And... Yeah.
And... We're gonna get a new theme song.
And apparently know that the theme is now that the doctor's an idiot.
Womp, 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 womp.
Surprised he didn't call himself pudding-brained.
Well, so we've kind of gone through this huge culmination of the relationship for Danny and Clara. We've gotten a bit of closure, or at least a better understanding of the doctor versus all soldiers dynamic as he interacts with Danny. We've talked for a bit about the this phenomenal dynamic between the mistress and the doctor right now, which we're all pretty much in agreement is going to be ongoing. Mm-hmm. Once we spend some time with Father Christmas for a little bit. So that leaves us with our primaries that that have been through everything over the course of a series. Have they really changed?
That's kind of a rough question.
Well, looking at it as if we're starting this, and I know we're not doing our series recap yet, and there's some thematic elements that I really want to put in front of you too. When we start into that, I really have some boiled down things that I want to see where you guys can take it. But this, when we see these final moments, them sitting there on the 2 weeks later discussion, and seeing how they're dealing, compensating, covering, however you want to call it, for where they both are individually and with one another. What is that telling you about who they are with each other at the end of this massive event?
Yeah. In the graveyard, when she's talking to Danny and she says, the one man I could never lie to. Mm-hmm. And then the next time that they're together, she's pretty much tells a massive lie. The way she used to do with Danny. Mm-hmm. I wonder, I'm almost positive that's not the last we're going to see of Clara, but I wonder what's going to happen next time they see each other.
Mm. Yeah. And at this point, I know I've said it before that I don't want Clara to go because I actually care about her now, but with the rumors and everything that came and I can't help but question, like, if she were to leave now, did they do a good job of building up to the end instead of just writing her out one episode because she decided to leave? And I really feel like they have. Like, if something were to happen in the Christmas episode and she decided to leave then, I think that they have built it to that point that it's acceptable. That it's the completion of the story instead of just the, here, poof, all right, and exit. So I think that
Was it Oswald Pink, the name of the future guy?
Orson.
Orson Pink.
Yeah.
I'm wondering I know. I'm wondering if at this point she is pregnant with Danny's child and that would be her impetus to leave.
Well, see, that was the thing that because we never found out what it was that she wanted to tell the doctor there, because he, assumed it was this and then said, oh, I found Gallifrey. And we haven't even talked about that. We'll get to that. But she never actually got to tell him. And that's what I was assuming, was she was going to tell him that she was pregnant.
Right. And, well, she was going to tell him that Danny was dead and then that she was pregnant.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I think the big news that was supposed to come out of that, because, he knew that Danny was dead, so it wasn't like, hey, newsflash, but yeah, I think that it was going to be like, no, Danny didn't come back, and I've got his kid. So,
I'm so glad, Haley, that you were picking up on the lying lines and her sort of doubling back or at least just stepping all over her own statements about her honesty or demonstrated lack of honesty with the doctor and vice versa, obviously, because he comes right back and does the exact same thing. I've been really looking at this friendship between the two of them that still has so much hidden, between each other, from each other. And if we looked at them at the outset, jumping back to our first episodes where they're working with one another and he's asking the questions about, be my pal, tell me straight, and asking for these kinds of answers. And they're not always overtly lying to one another, but they're withholding some things from each other because they don't really know each other that well yet and don't know how much of that trust can really be established if the doctor really doesn't know who she is. And she is really questioning whether the doctor is who she thought he was or who he's turning into. They go through everything through this series, and now you're at the end of the season, the point where they are now finally making the statements about their true care and concern for each other. They know each other now. They genuinely do. And yet they still, in their final minutes looking each other eye to eye, bold-faced lie to one another.
Well, and they kind of admit that they're lying to each other. His line about a hug is a way to hide your face. Mm-hmm. Hugs are a lie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we're going from lies because of a lack of trust to lies because of concern and care. I don't want to hurt you, so I'm not going to tell you everything. That's powerful. I don't really know what that means for the two of them, but that's a really interesting thing that I'm walking away with right now, is that they've been on both sides of this, and now they are still dishonest for very different reasons than they were at the outset.
Clara kind of bugged me this episode. Like, everything apart from her relationship with Danny irritated me, because at the beginning, it was a clever thing of her saying that she was the doctor instead and trying to extend her life and whatever. it was fun and it was clever. But then when she's out in the hallway, and why was she getting out of one of the tanks? I don't understand that part of it. But the Cybermen are sitting there, and she starts running through all of these things about the doctor. That, you know, oh, I've been married 4 times, and there's this, and I'm from Gallifrey, and I graduated from Oxford University, and all this different stuff. And then at one point, she's like, what about my name? If I told you my name, would that prove it? And I'm like, seriously? Like, how many episodes did we have that were covering up that, like, what his name actually was because of how dangerous it was? And you're just going to toss it out there to give you an extra, 5 minutes of life?
Like, she doesn't know his name, does she?
She's learned it a couple times. And so there's no, I don't know. It's one of those things that's like, well, you know, it's been so, you know, she knows that she doesn't know. She knows that at this point it's like, well, your guess is as good as mine. But it just seemed like she was so, I don't want to say inconsistent with the way that she, because first she's ready to toss his name out there to the, at a whim just to save her skin. And then she's banking on the fact that, you know, that she's his best friend and, you know, cashing in on the friendship that they have and all this. And it was just like, you know, can you pick one route and go with it? Because I don't understand what you're trying to accomplish here.
I haven't really thought about the fact that it was self-serving. When she's, it wasn't, I didn't take it so much as her trying to save her own skin so much as it was, she wanted to get back out into the, you know, she had places to be and other people to assist. And this was just a matter of, all right, take care of my own business here, get myself out of this so that I can get back into the fray. The name thing, or trying to play that card, I don't know if she ever would have actually divulged it. I kind of think that she does still perceive it or have some distant memory of it. You know, she wasn't retconned from what she learned from the Liquid Library and such, you know. I don't know. I guess I never really tried to hash that one out too hard. But I didn't get quite as soured on her behavior outside of the Danny relationship. Because again, I'm looking at it at the end and seeing how some of the things that she's doing, she honestly believes that she's doing it for his best interests.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that whole scene, I feel like she was just stalling for time until she could make her move. She was never going to say his name.
It was one of those things that just the first time that she said it, I kind of sat there like, wait, what? Like, why would you even bring it up? You know, at that point, and it just caught me off guard. And then I'll be honest, I watched this episode like 4 different times over the past 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And every time I caught more and more of her behavior that just irked me. So it might have just been something that hit me wrong the first time and just compounded, but
festered.
Yeah. So I there might not have been any problem. It was just one of those things that caught me off guard and it stuck. So.
Okay. No, that's legit. And actually, that'll probably mean that I'm going to be a little more attuned to sort of watch for that on my next spin around, which will probably be in about 45 minutes. because I'm really, you know, I was just fascinated by so much of what they were trying to pull off with this episode. And most of which was executed extremely well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, from a technical standpoint, in terms of just the overall feel, it just felt very cold and the literally doom and gloom. You know, as the way everything was sort of shot and framed and just enough action to keep it moving, but not too much action so that Moffat's writing gets a little squidgy. You know, we kind of kept that within limits. You know, the score was killing it. I think the sound mix was a little better this time around. That's something we've been tripping over a lot this series. But I think they're finally starting to realize that, hey, we need to hear the dialogue every once in a while, guys. and the Cybermen are, they're getting creepy again.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you've got an entire cyber zombie league now. It's just, ugh.
I have a very, very short list of issues, and I know that, I'm being called out on the fact that after I watch something twice, then I start picking it apart, you know, like that little thread in your sweater kind of thing. But my list was very short this time around, but that's, Haley mentioned this in the first 2 minutes tonight, that somewhere out there, floating out in the stratosphere, looking like a combination between the Rocketeer and Iron Man, is Cyberbrig. Why?
All right, so I have an explanation for you, but you're not going to like it.
Okay.
Why?
Oh, no, you're not going to play the handless card. Why would the
doctor keep a Cyberman head?
Oh, God damn you, Jay Whitten.
There you go, Badger. I told you it'd be worth it. No, but I mean, think about it. Like, who would the doctor want as a companion, regardless of the fact that they were a Cyberman? I mean, he had enough respect for the man that he actually finally granted him the salute. I mean, yeah. So,
and then gave him a dopey nickname and carried him around like a lunchbox.
No, see, what I'm saying is that he found him and said, "Okay, you know what? I can't keep it, or you know, I have no use for him." But we never found out where 11 got handles from.
No,
who's to say
true.
That? Who's to say that 12 didn't go back, leave him in a box, and be like, "This is going to come in handy. You're going to need him."
Viable
headcanon accepted.
So I'm wondering how many Cybermen were not completely under the control of the magic bracelet and are just still wandering about.
Well, that leads to the other thing about the cyber army here. This is, again, as we had with the was it the Lodger or was it Closing Time when closing we fight time. Against? All right, so Closing Time.
Yeah.
So you can fight off cybernetic upgrading through the power of love. You know, and we joked about it a little bit at the time during Closing Time. And then here we're kind of seeing it again on a more, heartfelt scale with Danny, you know, just resisting just enough to be able to not do the cyber hokey pokey, with the rest of them. And then the Brig apparently has the ability, now given a corporeal form again, even momentarily to be able to break out of control long enough to catch his falling daughter and those things. So we've got, these few examples. Don't you think there'd be a couple others of people
See,
who...
I was wondering if it was anybody that didn't hit the delete emotions button on the iPad is acting like this. So Danny didn't, the Brig didn't. There's got to be other people that didn't.
Very possibly, but, you know, they might not be in the general vicinity that we were able to see.
Right, but they're still wandering around.
I'm saying that it takes a almost superhuman level of dedication for it to be able to work. Because if you think about it, like, Danny had that kind of discipline and that kind of dedication to Clara. The Brig, obviously, I mean, there's no question. For, you know, what was his name? I can't remember his name now. The guy from Closing Time.
Craig?
Craig, yes. Like, I'm sorry, if a father who loves his children hears them crying, there's no force on the planet that can stop you.
Precisely right, but that's why I'm saying that there would have been, you know, rocketing Cybermen peeling off left and right because they can't, you know, bring themselves to be, you know, parted from their family. You know, that emotion is principal to so many of us.
I'd say that it was probably, you'd probably be right about like the freshly departed, we'll say.
Yeah, the ones that have been gone for a while, hit the button a long time ago.
Or accepted the fact that things have moved on. You know, the Brigadier is always going to be faithful regardless. That's his character. Other people, not so much. You know, time goes, you move on, you accept things, even in the afterlife. You know, Danny had that kind of dedication that no matter what, he was always going to protect Clara. So it's, you know, yes, at this point, we're getting severely pedantic and really hand-waving, but...
Well, but that's one of the things that it's a real Pandora's box, because if you're going to reference a character so iconic...
Yeah.
And someone who's been such an integral part of the legacy of this show for decades, and you're gonna go with that kind of an application of putting him in a super suit, then you're gonna risk irritating a lot of people, and there are a lot of people really upset about the Cyberbrig, really upset. And I speaking as someone who holds it near and dear, I mean, I'm not gonna deny for the fact that I was crying my eyes out in front of 350 people last night at just when they put his face up on the wall in boat one.
Yeah.
You know, and then you give this kind of a sign. So emotionally, absolutely executed beautifully. It was a very, very beautifully done little statement, but was it right for the Brig? I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. It's one of those things you're just going to have to either you accept it and it was great, or it's going to be a sticking point and you just have to accept the fact that it was there and try not to get hung up on it too much. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that we can do at this point, and you accept it or you don't.
Right. Well, then here's another one of these help me figure this out, okay?
All right.
And that's the bracelet. Danny goes off, offers to, you know, we are gonna burn the clouds. Mm-hmm. How are you gonna burn the clouds? Because I'm going to burn. Okay, up he goes. Poof, everything incinerated, dust gone. How did the bracelet, which somehow allows him this magical power to break on through from the other side, or in this case with the boy, how did the bracelet get back?
I'm going to hand wavy this one and say, like, psychic energy, psychic link stuff, science.
Okay.
Because Moffat had no other way to wrap it up. That's why.
Because he had to make you feel like you were going to get Danny back for a second so he could punch you in the feels one more time.
Yeah.
Because two deaths isn't enough for this guy.
Well, he's making up for lost time.
I mean, I knew the moment I saw it starting, you know, when the voice through the vapor started emerging, and I knew, and I turned next to Raimani, the friend of ours who was with us, and said, okay, and we're going to slap the I believe button for a second here, and that's okay, because it's still, you know, it's making for a good story, but it's just, it felt a little, not cheap, but quick. It's a quick write-off. I needed, well, as you said, get me out of this.
I felt like this was the one major misstep. Like, I mean, there were some others, I'll grant you, I'm not going to, but most of them I could overlook. This is the one moment when I went back and rewatched it every time. So I was like, all right, are we done with this yet? Because really, really.
See, like, I feel like they had to do it to set up the part where the doctor thinks that Danny is still alive.
Yeah.
Because there's no other reason he would think that.
No, and I get that. And it's, you know, it's one of those moments that just, had it been something better scripted, then it would have worked fantastically. But this was just like, I need to get from point A to point C, so we're just going to take this version of B and slam it in.
So step two is question mark. Step three is profit.
Yeah, exactly.
Underpants.
Yeah, but that's one of the things that I did not like about this episode at all. Because, I mean, again, it's like, you know, just one person, one trip, one more cliche that we can slam in there. Mm. Really? Really? It's like, so Missy can use this thing bouncing back and forth, you know, all over the place, have no problems at all. And but now that, you know, whatever.
They don't have magic bracelet chargers in the nether sphere.
Well, those take a USB 2 plug. Sorry.
No, it's that weird B-shaped USB cord. They're impossible to find.
Does anybody have the 30-pin iPhone chargers anymore? Come on.
Oh, yeah. I've got one of those right here.
Well, all right. Flipping back to the positive side of the coin here for a bit, because I just had those couple of things I wanted to try and figure those out. I do want to give credit to Kat at the LI Who convention, who had caught the fact that in the credits right after we saw Nick Frost, that was awesome. And because they did that stutter stop on the credits, which threw everybody.
Yeah.
But.
Is everyone like halfway out of their chair?
Oh yeah, you try to immediately shut 350 people up really quickly, like really quickly, because someone looks back over and goes, "Hi guys, there's still something going on the screen." So, but Nick Frost was credited as Santa Claus on a British program, and her dig on that was, "Well, haven't we become Americanized?
Do they not use the term Santa Claus at all in Britain?
Father Christmas,
really?"
Almost, well, I'm not going to say exclusively, but the vast majority in Father Christmas, yeah. So that's the fact that, and which would have even been better because they could have just called him Saint Nick and then credited as Nick Frost, which would have been just awesome. But no, I thought that was an interesting little catch.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't sure, you know, seeing it here in the States, I wasn't sure if that was something where they actually kind of modified the tail credits for the U.S. broadcast.
Do we see that? That becomes a question of like, is Santa Claus a more familiar name in the UK than Father Christmas is in the US? Like, is there going to be more of a stumbling block seeing him credited as Santa Claus in England than it would be? Because I know there's plenty of people I know here in the States that are going to be like, Father Christmas, what the heck is that? Was Santa Claus, you know? So is the term more acceptable over there than vice versa?
That's a valid point.
I would think so, especially as much American popular culture content gets pumped out across the pond.
That's a big boat. We're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah, I would think that they would be fairly familiar with the American term.
All right. So let's go back for a moment. And the moment where the Doctor is explaining that he found Gallifrey, and then we see what actually plays out. That, I mean, I put it here in my notes, and I'll say this, that I understand that he's hurting, and I completely felt it as well, but you do not take it out on the TARDIS.
See, I was thinking maybe he hit the squidgy console so that they don't have to deal with it ever again.
That was one of those moments, almost like in Series 7 in Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, where the guy starts taking the laser saw to the TARDIS, and it was physically painful to watch that. And then the Doctor starts pounding on the console. I'm like, what did she do to you?
She took him to the coordinates that she probably
She didn't
knew
always take him where he wanted to go.
It bothered me that he started pounding the TARDIS. I was like, you know, it just bothered me.
Right. But, taking that, though, did you genuinely expect... Well, there's two things I want to kind of throw here. One, did you think it was a bit abrupt to suddenly drop the Gallifrey card now after no mention since Day of the Doctor?
I think if you're going to bring the Master back, you have to address it because the Master was so tied up with the disappearance of Gallifrey last time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Had it been something like a Dalek spouting it out there or some random villain, then yes, it would have been like, wait, why? Why are you? But no, because it's the Master, because it's Missy, then yes, it was acceptable.
Okay. And then the other half of that is, did you genuinely expect it to be there?
I almost did. Like, there was a moment there when I did, because of the way that she delivered it. Like, I've lost everything. There's no point in keeping this back now. And she had that genuine, like, you know, everything I've been working for is gone kind of defeat to her that I thought she might have actually been telling the truth.
Right. I completely believed her when she said it, and I was completely unsurprised when I found out she was lying.
That is a great way of putting it, yeah.
I both believe you and distrust you equally. Well played. Okay. So then is this now going to give us, does this potentially give us our driving force for Series 9 that since this was, you know, kind of dangled out there, then not only the carrot, but the entire stick and the rope it was hanging with and everything were put away for a while, now brought back with intent, because as you said, if we're gonna dance with the mistress for a while now, then this is gonna be one of the linchpins to their interaction and well, I'll call it relationship. I mean, they've snogged and everything, but is that something that if the Christmas episode is a farewell to Clara? And maybe the Doctor runs solo for a bit. That's a clear path for him to start doing a more concerted effort to hunt for Gallifrey. Or that the two of them, as they're, you know, locking horns occasionally, are drawing nearer and nearer to that solution. Maybe neither of them really know, I'm sure he doesn't know, but maybe she doesn't fully know, and that kind of thing.
I was going to say, there's a very good possibility that she's lying about even knowing where it is. It could have been that she just got, like, randomly spit out somewhere and has no idea, and she's trying to beat him back there.
Mm.
So it's, you know, I mean, that would be a good thing. Hey, look, I've got you this whole cyber army. Go and play with your toys for a little bit. I'm going to go over here and search. Yeah.
Or utilizing him as a sort of a pawn to do the grunt work of searching for it.
Yeah. Hey, it's on the other side of this wall. Hey, look, evil wall.
Well, just, you know, getting him, you know, being the catalyst to get him working towards some end where she's actually at the controls, or she's doing it for so that she can not really ride the coattails, but be able to just leapfrog past him once he draws close enough. He does the heavy lifting. Huh.
It'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure. I think that it really depends on how, I don't know, like, I could see the Christmas special being either completely unrelated to anything or completely crucial, and I don't know which direction it's going to go. So,
I kind of think that for the Christmas special, we're going to see Nick Frost doing a Ghost of Christmas Present kind of thing. And it's either going to bring the Doctor and Clara back together or give them a proper goodbye. And then we'll go into Series 9.
I could definitely see it playing out that way.
Mm. It is interesting to note that now we're dealing with a Christmas special that is serving, rather than a tee-up for the following series, this is an epilogue for the current series, so we're getting this as, like, the close of the book, rather than a peek into what's to come. And I think that that's, I think script wise, that's going to be more of what we have rather than trying to bleed into setting up or teeing up for series 9. It's really going to help us tend to the last few rough corners and uncomfortable spots from 8.
You know what I think is going to happen is Moffat is going to wait for the response for Series 8, and then he's going to start planning out what he's going to do with 9 based on fan reaction. Because apparently what he did was he heard everything about Series 7 and said, okay, they said I don't kill enough people, doing that, no overarching stories, okay, we'll do that. I mean, he had a grocery list that he hit this series, and everything that we complained about in Series 7, he nailed each and every one of them. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's waiting it out. And
no, remember, he's totally got the end of Series 9 planned.
Yeah.
Well, that's not just, I mean, we keep putting it in his lap, but you got to remember that there's other people back there too who are serving as sort of whispers in his ear too. I mean, coming out of, by the time we were closing out on Name of the Doctor, that was when you were seeing the last couple involvements or the last points where Carolyn Skinner was holding one of the producer's seats. Mm-hmm. And all of her contributions. I mean, and she came into it from Dr. Widow in the Wardrobe, so you know, she kind of ran that stretch. You didn't have, by the time we got to Day of the Doctor, he still wasn't making the decision entirely solo because there was Faith Penhale there and her background to be able to help keep that, keep the grandeur of the 50th scale of it within limits so that it didn't become him really fanboy gushing to the lack of a solid story. So by the time you get into the Time of the Doctor and play that through, now you've got Brian Minchin in there, who has had so much experience, as a script editor for Torchwood, as the associate producer for Torchwood, the Sarah Jane Adventures throughout its entire run, the latter half of its run. He is just as much of a coordinator in terms of keeping the story structure intact, so that I think that works really well, just like Gatiss does for Moffat on the Sherlock side of things. Minchin's involvement to be able to say, loving what you got here in terms of your ideas of what you want to do, loving these monsters you're coming up with, that's fantastic stuff. But we, as you were saying, we're getting a lot of public outcry for these, whatever, however many items. We need to start paying attention to this, like any good editor would with a novel or something like that. Yeah. And just hand back revisions and say, loving it, but... Mm-hmm. So I got to tip the hat to the entire team on this one, not just Moffat finally listening to us screaming, what are you, don't got the balls to kill somebody?
Yeah. No,
oh, you do.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry I said anything. Jeez.
Bananas.
Hey, Missy, you're so fine. You're so fine. God, what a great script. This is one where I'm going to want to have there may be two or three episodes this season where I want to have the transcript just in hard copy and just be able to just read through it just for fun, you know, read through print out the subtitles just so I can go through the dialogue because it was just so much fun.
Oh, it was. It was outstanding. And I mean, like,
I thought it was kind of nice that the doctor was saying that elections are stupid, like 5 days after our elections.
Coincidence? Of course not. Oh, that was great.
Sorry, President Earf. That was, oh, by the way, that was one last thing that I kind of caught on that, and this is just, it does kind of cross outside of the fandom a little bit, but the fact that they were doing the whole executive order thing, that we have emergency precautions that we have to set into place. Mm-hmm. So now you're taking what has always been, you know, this sci-fi show, with some elements of comedy to it when it needs to be. It can be light. It can even have a little bit of romance to it when it needs to because it's a good drama and so forth. And now you're putting some kind of, some political drama into it too, which it used to do quite a bit in the classic era. You know, they broach that every once in a while, and especially when dealing with UNIT. But when you really get that right, it adds something really interesting to a sci-fi story because now it makes the world that much more involved it's not just saying, oh, you know, the president of Uganda is on the phone and he's seen strange lights in the sky or something like that. And it's not that light of an involvement. Now you're talking about entire organizational structure of seats of power. And it makes me think of other shows where they take a sci-fi premise and then they very carefully and effectively put that element into it too, like BSG and Babylon 5 and some of those others. I really thought that was refreshing to me to see that they were willing to take a risk of doing that. You know, I haven't seen it since, you know, back when Baker got
elected president.
President Gallifrey. Didn't really want the position. So yeah, I just thought that was really cool.
Not to this extent, but they did it a little bit with Tennant. They
yes.
Had him, yeah.
Yep, that valid. But I think there were some things that the Capaldi's able to do because of his presence that that I don't think some of our other doctors could have pulled off quite the same. You know, you had Matt Smith leading the fleet, you know, going into Good Man Goes to War. Yeah, and him taking that. But even then, it was like he was like the loose cannon kind of thing, you know, infiltrating, you know, among the headless monks and that sort of thing. And it wasn't like him at the controls, you know, or at the helm, you know, issuing the battalions forward and that sort of thing. And
right.
I
the blood-soaked old general line wouldn't have worked on Matt Smith.
Oh, no. Not so much. No. And I don't know if I could even see Tennant doing that with the same sort. Maybe, but something in the back of my head just doesn't see that either. I don't know what it is about Capaldi's presence that if it came down to it, even though he's just got this palpable disdain for the authority in 9 times out of 10, but he's got that Malcolm Tucker to him. You know? Yeah. So it's just, you know, he snaps his fingers and a lot of people are going to stand up a little bit straighter.
Well, you know, I was just randomly flipping through channels earlier today or yesterday. I can't remember when. And you know, Doctor Who was on, it was Time Heist. And I was like, okay, you know, I left it on while I was folding laundry and stuff. And there was that line where, you know, Zebra asks, you know, like he said, who put you in charge? And he said, that's my superpower. What's yours? You know, and that really is. It's like the doctor just, he walks into a room and command is just thrust upon him. You know, that's who he is.
Yeah. Or assumes that in viewing that there is no other position of authority, that someone's got to do it. It can't just be left freewheeling. So that's part of his command or the persona they've really given Capaldi's doctor, is more of a conscious, acceptance of the fact that, well, all right, hold on. Give me 1 second. I got to roll up my sleeves because none of you chumps are putting brain idiots are going to be capable of doing it. So,
yep.
Wow.
This was a heck of a ride though, and really just phenomenally done. I mean, I can't think of a series finale that I have enjoyed as much, just for what it brought to the table emotionally and, you know, feeding into the story. You know, there were some missteps and whatnot, but all in all, this was one of the most well put together things that I've seen for a finale.
Yeah,
it was pretty solid.
We did get some feedback from the listeners. Howard said we had asked how everyone was dealing with the aftermath, and Howard said, how are we dealing with the aftermath, you ask? Well, as River might say, disgracefully. Bobby Honeycutt said, Coldwater, death in heaven. I enjoyed Missy. I'm on Team Danny, and I empathize with the doctor when he didn't find Gallifrey. So definitely got into the feels in this one. Preston wasn't as impressed. He said he wasn't blown away by the finale. Kind of boring. Too much emotional nonsense. Think it's time for Mr. Briggs to take over.
Yeah, I think I created a monster in setting up the Nick Briggs for showrunner campaign. Not that I take that back, but Preston, keep chiming in with us. Give us some more explanation as to how you felt you could take some of the story threads that we had to work on, like the Danny and Claire relationship, like the Doctor and Danny pairing and that sort of thing, how we could have given them their closure without emotional, well, you know, as you want to call it, emotional nonsense, and that's, you know, legit for your take on it, but how could you do that without getting emotional or involving emotion, I should say.
And then Andy wrote in and said, having slept on it overnight, some sequences during the middle, I was angry about the stupidity and carelessness of some of the characters, which led to grave consequences. Guards regarding this. Falling asleep.
Well, you know.
Overall, first part still more enjoyable than the second, although I was impressed with Michelle Gomez finally having more to do and would not be sad if this wasn't the last of her.
Okay.
So, completely agree.
Absolutely agree. I want to see her come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had that moment too where, you know, the whole Missy and Osgood thing where, you know, she manages to take off her handcuffs and put lipstick on and the guards are just sitting there like, you know, they're playing Angry Birds or something. Like, is no one paying attention to the, you know...
You had one trained. Job.
Literally.
Probably trained by the same people who used to keep watch over River.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was why I was a little weirded out when I saw her applying the lipstick. I'm like, okay, where are we going with this one?
Yeah. But apparently there were a couple people that watched the show. Just a few. Yeah. The viewing figures. It's Kira's favorite time.
All right, I'll be back in a minute. I'm going to get some water.
Yay, numbers.
So we actually got 5.45 overnight for this one, which is the highest overnight figures that we've had aside from Deep Breath. So, yeah, people paid attention to this one. Dark Water wound up with a 7.34 final and an AI of 85, so tied for first place. So, but again, everything right in that same window that it's been the entire time. But actually, Dark Water has the highest final, again, aside from Deep Breath. So I don't think that we're going to be able to top Deep Breath. I don't think that that's something that's going to happen. Hmm. But, because, I mean, that one was hyped to hell and back. So
I don't know, this one, if you look at the long scale of it, I think it probably got about the same amount of overall anticipation time. I mean, because they've been building up to this for weeks in advance. While they were still airing other episodes, they were already starting to prep us for the grandeur of the finale. Yeah.
Well, but you think about the series premiere, though. I mean, like, go all the way back to the announcement of Capaldi as the Doctor.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, the live, the global simulcast of the announcement, all of the tour and everything beforehand. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going into drawing attention to it. Whereas with the finale, it's like, hey, you know, we've got this great series going and it's going to end in a couple weeks. Pay attention. Hmm. So it didn't have near the amount of buildup that Deep Breath did. But so the fact that the numbers are as close as they are is pretty astounding.
Yes.
But yeah, so we've got, what, another week of the numbers, then you'll be freak here.
Yeah. Then we can start hypothesizing about what the numbers will look like for Series 9.
No, we got the Christmas special still.
You know, people don't watch TV on Christmas.
But we do have a little bit of news this week. So there was an article, or a video, I should say, of Peter Capaldi and Moffat both talking about the Master's gender change. And, you know, both the praise and the criticism that it's gained, and it's just their takes on it. It's one of those things that's really interesting just to hear what they have to say about it. You know, Moffat said she's different from the other masters that we've seen because obviously she's taken a female form. And then he goes on to say,
wow, that's deep and insightful. Thanks.
Moffat splaining. But then he goes on to say, it's just a proper good old twist. We've been saying for years now, certainly since I took over, the regeneration can change your gender, and that I thought it might be is maybe the one they won't see coming. And that's true, because we've all been clamoring for, you know, when are we going to get a female doctor? And it's like, oh, well, fine, here's a Time Lord that changes, and yeah, you're not cutting. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, yeah. So,
well, Clara did say maybe the doctor could be Queen of Gallifrey.
Yes, yes, she did. Then some other news that we've got. This one was actually really interesting. Not anything about news, but about Peter Capaldi. There was an autistic child who's a fan of the show who had recently lost his grandmother, I believe. And Capaldi sent him a video message in character as the doctor. Not in costume or anything, but he put on the character and sent this child a video message telling him that, you know, everything is going to be okay. Just a great, great way to reach out to the fans.
Yeah, so prepare to do a little bit of quiet weeping to yourself after watching. So you're not done crying yet after yesterday.
No. Then they've also released the Christmas special teaser. Mm-hmm. This is only about 15 seconds long, and you're not really getting anything mind-blowingly amazing. The only thing that I really picked up on was the fact that we don't see Clara. But
yes, they
again, yeah. it's 15 seconds, so. Granted, then, you know, the what the trailers that we were getting for this episode with, you know, Claire saying Claire Oswald never existed, and that was, you know, a throwaway line that was gone 2 seconds later. So it's
all your theories based on that. Ha 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 ha.
They know how to work these trailers to make you, you know, it's great misdirection sometimes. So then the last bit of news that we've got, I am thoroughly thrilled about this one because I cannot wait for it to come out. But apparently the Big Finish story, Dark Eyes 3, is going to be coming out, and it is available to pre-order right now.
Correct. This has been talked about all weekend. We had a lot of great representation from the Big Finish staff, including Jason Hailery, speaking on a lot of the panels with a lot of the guests who have done the recordings for the past. This is the 15th anniversary for Big Finish and the work that they've been doing. They were taking a running tally about the number of productions they released, and we're looking at 437 titles put out. Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. They were joking that because they came up with a number later in the weekend and discussed it on another panel. They said, I think we've actually released four more since we came up with that number on Friday. So, but one of the things, obviously, since Paul McGann was attending for the con, was they were talking about a lot about Dark Eyes, you know, as their award-winning series. Just amazing, amazing material. If you haven't even gotten a chance to break into the first Dark Eyes series yet, because it's just fascinating depth, regardless of whether or not it's something where, you know, I'm not comfortable about jumping into the Eighth Doctor stuff. I don't really know about that, but it's just the caliber of this is exceptional. And the story, as you start getting through first and second series of this, is riveting stuff. So, you know, I got Jay fully steeped in it now, and he's ready to tear into it. And so, yeah, get your early jump on the drop for Dark Eyes 3. And then once you get fully invested in that, because you'll get your copy of it by the end of the month here, and then you can start throwing your money down early for Dark Eyes 4, which is going into the studio right now. They're like headed into the booth, and they're planning on releasing that in April of next year. So just all the things.
It's exciting. I can't wait for it.
Yeah.
But that's about all the news that we've got this week. So next week we are going to be taking a look back and doing a wrap up of Series 8 and looking at Series 8 as a whole and the things that it was able to accomplish. So, and I'm sure we'll probably spend more time talking about this episode because I don't think I hit half my notes.
No, we just figured you didn't want to listen to us talk for 3 hours. So,
yeah, there was that. And we've also got Keir, just actually about 10 minutes before we started recording tonight, just made it
just
back from Long Island.
Screeching into the driveway, yeah.
So Keir was at Long Island Who, and he got some great interviews with Paul McGann, Colin Baker, Fraser Hines, and a number of others. So we will be releasing those as time goes on. So definitely come back and pay attention to those. And he'll be writing an article as well for the site. So
yeah, I'll get that posted to the site with some media taken that weekend and some mentions of some great folks who I got an opportunity to speak with who I think you want to start spending more time reading from and listening to. So big thanks to Ken Deep and Andre and all of the staff there who made it very, very welcoming for media relations there. Just a great experience, and I'll get the written material out there for you as soon as I catch some sleep because I'm freaking tired.
Can't imagine why.
Yeah, I don't know. And then we'll get the interviews into your hands equally quickly, so that you can start enjoying them too. Just a great chance to speak with some amazing people.
Awesome. So you guys have anything else to say wrapping up?
I think that's about it for this week. I mean, more next week. But
yeah. Just take a breath and just prepare to really pull the scope back, you know, because if this episode was just a culmination of a lot of the things that we've been enjoying about this entire series, then now next week we get to pull back to 10,000 feet and say, wow, how'd we do?
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been episode 111 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, well, come on, you're on the clock.
And this is Keir saying, bananas.
And this is Haley saying, hey, Missy, you're so fine, you blow my wings.
See you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You can also go to GunnaGeek.com to check out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.